Hello, this is your Polycast for Monday, August 29th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, some legislative races could lose candidates and a trial run for the new Viking Stadium. The Republican nominee for a Minneapolis House seat says he's suspending his campaign to deal with family issues. Abdi Malik Oscar is the Republican nominee on the ballot against DFL candidate Ilhan Omar, who defeated longtime DFL State Representative Phyllis Kahn in the primary earlier this month. It's believed to be the first state office race in the country with two major party candidates who are both Somali Americans. Oscar says it's been a difficult year. His father just died, his wife is pregnant, and he's trying to finish up his doctorate at St. Mary's University of Minnesota.
All these responsibilities, I said that I cannot do campaigning, door knocking, and overwhelming.
A Republican official in the district says at this point the party plans to leave Oscar's name on the ballot unless another candidate steps forward. Meanwhile, a Republican state representative is in danger of being kicked off the November ballot after a judge ruled that he doesn't live in his legislative district. The final decision on Representative Bob Barrett is up to the Minnesota Supreme Court, which hears the case on September 6th. But Ramsey County District Judge George Stevenson ruled Friday that clear and convincing evidence suggests Barrett doesn't live in the district he represents and that his name should come off the ballot. Minnesota legislative candidates must live in the district where they're running for at least 6 months before the election. Barrett lists his formal address in Taylor's Falls, but also owns a home in Shafter, just outside his district. He says he's confident he'll prevail before the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, the state Supreme Court is scheduled to hear arguments this week on a proposed ballot measure to increase the minimum wage in Minneapolis to $15 an hour. Martin Moylan reports.
Over objections of the city council, a Hennepin County judge ruled last week that a ballot question asking voters to raise the city's minimum wage to $15 an hour must go before voters in November. The city appealed to the state's highest court, requesting an accelerated review. Early voting starts September 23rd. Mayor Betsy Hodges supports a higher minimum wage, but says the city charter doesn't allow for putting the issue to voters. Backers of the charter amendment say a higher minimum wage would reduce poverty and racial income disparities. The head of the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce has said the wage hike could be a problem for businesses. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
U.S. Bank Stadium is getting positive reviews from football fans ahead of the Vikings' first regular season home game against Green Bay on September 18th. Taxpayers covered about half the cost of the $1.1 billion stadium. A sellout crowd was there yesterday as the Vikings hosted their first preseason matchup, although on TV it looked like there were some empty seats. Matt Sepik has more.
The Vikings' 23-10 victory over the San Diego Chargers counts for absolutely nothing in terms of pro football statistics, but it does count in the annals of Twin Cities sports history. It was the first NFL game played at U.S. Bank Stadium. The building made its official debut with a European soccer match August 3rd. There was also an open house in July. But Carrie Mortrude of Cottage Grove would have none of that. A 20-year Vikings season ticket holder, she wanted her first experience at the stadium to be a football game. Mortrude says the natural light from the translucent roof and the wide concourses are a welcome change from the old Metrodome.
It didn't feel as claustrophobic as the dome, so it's nice that there's a little extra breathing room. Obviously, people don't know exactly which gate to come in, so there was a lot of, you know, heading left when they probably should have been heading right, but, you know, it's the first preseason game.
Kevin Ellich, who recently moved from the Twin Cities to Dallas, came back to see the Vikings yesterday. He also says there were some hiccups getting in, but there were plenty of staffers outside pointing the way.
They had a lot of people helping out and directing you, and it was just a little confusing. Like, we wanted to go meet some people who were tailgating in one of the lots, and like with all the streets closed off and whatnot, was a little new. You know, I mean, the logistics are, you know, a little shaky, but that'll improve as well.
3 weeks ago, many soccer fans said they had difficulty getting around inside the stadium and accessing public transit after the game was over. things appeared to go more smoothly yesterday. As Vikings fans poured out of the doors, Metro Transit workers in fluorescent vests directed them to blue and green line trains and overflow buses.
Okay, so in order to go over to Washington, you want to take the steps up and over to get to the other side.
Other transit staffers held megaphones playing recorded announcements.
Blue line Mall of America, right. Green line St. Paul, left.
When it comes to managing the traffic flow of nearly 67,000 football fans, Michelle Kelm-Helgen, chair of the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority, says seemingly minute details matter a lot. At the soccer game, workers held up improvised signs on sticks to direct traffic. Kelm-Helgen says staff solved that problem quickly.
We added a lot more wayfinding signage, so I think people, as they enter the building, are finding it to be a lot easier to figure out, should I go right, left, up, down. I think staff have really had a lot more training and also just more experience in the building.
Kelm-Helgen says additional stanchions by the food vendors have also helped improve traffic flow. She expects staff to make additional tweaks ahead of upcoming games. One area for improvement, she says, is making sure craft beer sellers are well stocked to keep wait times to a minimum. The Minnesota Vikings host their final preseason game against the Los Angeles Rams Thursday night. The first regular season matchup at U.S. Bank Stadium will be the Vikings and Green Bay Packers on September 18th. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
Finally, this story from Friday. Minnesota will try to reduce the use of insecticides that may be contributing to a decline in bees and other beneficial insects. Governor Dayton issued an executive order last week requiring state agencies to take a variety of steps to protect pollinators. Environmentalists praised the action, but farm groups were not pleased. Dan Gunderson has more.
Nicotine-based insecticides known as neonicotinoids are effective against a variety of pests, so they're widely used. But a growing body of research shows the insecticides harm bees. Ag Commissioner Dave Fredrickson says after a two-year review of 300 scientific studies, the state Ag Department decided restrictions were necessary.
Some of these are bold recommendations that have not been considered by any other state across the nation.
Here are some of the big changes. Before neonicotinoid insecticides can be applied, users must demonstrate a pest problem, and the state will increase inspection and enforcement to make sure users follow label restrictions designed to protect bees. The governor also ordered state agencies to create and protect pollinator habitat on land they manage and to stop using neonicotinoids on state-managed lands. Fredrickson says the Ag Department will ask the legislature for authority to regulate seeds treated with pesticides before they're planted. That's a big deal because right now the federal EPA doesn't regulate pesticides applied to seeds.
Really, nobody is regulating seed treatment. And of course, that about 80% of the seeds that are planted today are treated with neonics.
Studies show dust from planting treated seeds drifts off of fields and contaminates other flowering plants where bees feed. A Minnesota beekeeper is part of a federal lawsuit trying to force the EPA to regulate seeds treated with pesticide. DFL State Representative Rick Hansen pushed for the state review of neonicotinoids, and he thinks the public will support expanded state regulation.
I hear this when I'm door knocking, and I hear it when I'm in the country. I travel around the state. People love pollinators. They get the connection with our food and with our environment and with our economy.
Environmental groups also cheered today's announcement. Lex Horan is with Pesticide Action Network, a group that's pushed for more pesticide regulation in Minnesota and nationally.
We know that pesticides are a huge factor in pollinator decline, and Minnesota is the first agricultural state especially to take bold action on neonicotinoids, including calling on the state to regulate the major issue of pesticide seed coatings.
Some agriculture groups were disappointed with the move to restrict pesticide use. The Minnesota Soybean Growers Association called it a knee-jerk reaction. David Key is research director for the Soybean Growers. He says limiting pesticide options might lead to pests that are resistant to treatment.
Consequently, we need flexibility in our chemicals. We've got to have choices. If we don't, we'll have a resistance issue develop.
Key says farmers might be overusing neonicotinoid insecticides, and he supports using them only when needed. But he worries state regulations will limit farmers' options. The state recommendations come the same day another study from University of Minnesota researchers was published showing the effects neonicotinoid insecticides have on bees. Judy Wu Smart found bees exposed to the chemical become less active.
This study is showing that there are impacts or adverse effects on the queen's ability to lay and move around the hive and the colony's ability to function normally.
Marla Spivak, who co-authored the study, calls the state proposal to use insecticides only when needed a common sense approach.
And so that in itself is a huge statement. Nobody else in the nation is making that statement. So it's a big correction. It's drawing a line in the sand and saying, no, we're going to use our pesticides in Minnesota responsibly.
The state will be taking applications for a 15-member committee to oversee pollinator protection policy and advise the governor. Covering the environment, with reporting from Elizabeth Dunbar, Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Moorhead.
And that's your Polycast for this Monday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.